evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 1st, 2019. Thousands of protesters stand on the streets of Khartoum.
There were 10,000 of people in one avenue, and they also gathered in Bahri, more than 10,000 protesters, and in Omdurman also. They tried to reach the palace, the presidential palace, but security forces stopped them and fired tear gas against them.
And the Sudanese diaspora react to the latest crackdown on protesters in the Sudanese capital.
No, he's not gone. I mean, the thing is, a lot of people think is we don't have a figurehead in Sudan. We have a system, and that's why we're trying to get rid of. And the system is the one who's running the country. The same people that with Bashir 30 years, they are the same people running the MTC, which is the military council.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Pro-democracy protesters across Sudan have taken again to the streets today after a protest in Khartoum and other cities turned deadly yesterday. After weeks of quiet, the protesters are again demanding the transitional ruling council negotiate with the opposition leaders. At least five protesters are believed to have died, and the government says three members of the rapid support security force support were killed. The government says the deaths were caused by unknown gunmen firing on the crowd. Reporter Naba Mohyeddin is in Khartoum and spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson earlier today about the protests.
The protest was so big. There was no point before the protest, before June 30, because protesters were so scary. And they were expecting a big repression by RSF or by security forces, because this is the first protest after June 3rd. People gathered in Matar Avenue, which is a very, very big and important avenue next to airport. There were 10,000 of people in one avenue, and they also gathered in Bahri, more than 10,000 protesters, and in Omdurman also. They tried to reach the palace, the presidential palace, but security forces stopped them and fired tear gas against them. And people also protested in Madani, which is a very, very big state, very big city in Al Jazeera state, not far from Khartoum. And people also protested in Kassala and in Halfa. It was a really million-person march.
So my next question then is, what's going on today?
Today, people are still they are still protesting in some cities in Khartoum, because yesterday opposition told them to be in a sit-in in very big squares in the capital, but people were not organizing this. They were not expecting the sit-in. So they said it's better to protest every day because they don't know the security situation under the blackouts of the internet and the insecure situation. So people decided to protest every day to make the TMC hand over power for civilians.
Has there been any military or security force action today against protesters?
No, they just fired tear gas in Omdurman in some places in Bahri to dispel the protest, but they didn't attack people and they didn't fire live ammunition. Not yesterday and not today. Just in Omdurman yesterday, they fired live ammunition and. Number of victims died.
Right. Now, what is the military saying? What is the military government saying about the protest?
Military government said that they will reach an agreement with opposition leaders, which will satisfy Sudanese people very soon. And the deputy chief of TMC, General Hamdan Daglo, he said that the agreement will be announced soon, and the negotiation will be continued soon.
How has the opposition reacted to that statement? Do they seem to think that there is going to be an agreement?
No. Opposition has already stated that TMC is saying something and doing another thing, and that was so obvious from their rejection of integrating the mediation, the Ethiopian and African mediation, and opposition asked protesters to stay in the streets because they said that TMC, they always say something and they do another thing. So there is no progression in the negotiation yet, and the opposition is still waiting for the promises that TMC kept saying for many days, even before the big protest.
That was VOA's reporter Naba Mohiadine in Khartoum. She was speaking with my colleague Kate Dalson. The Sudanese in the diaspora also held demonstrations across several U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C., over the weekend. Even though Sudan's longtime president Omar al-Bashir is gone, the protesters in Washington say the systems he initiated are still in place. Ayen Deng Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Yesterday would have been the 30th anniversary of Omar al-Bashir's presidency. He was overthrown in April, but he's not really gone, according to Virginia-based Sudanese demonstrator Abdel Gadir al-Madani.
Still in power today. No, he's not gone. I mean, the thing is, a lot of people think is we don't have a figurehead in Sudan. We have a system, and that's why we're trying to get rid of. And the system is the one who's running the country. The same people that with Bashir 30 years, they are the same people running the MTC, which is the military council.
The day before Sunday's deadly protests in Khartoum, Sudanese in the diaspora got together to rally support on social media for the planned protests in Sudan. Saturday was the hottest day of the year so far in Washington, with temperatures soaring to 35.5 degrees Celsius. But the scorching heat and humidity did not stop dozens of members in the Sudanese diaspora from showing up in front of the U.S. Capitol to protest against the latest developments in Sudan, including Naima Ahmed of Virginia, who describes herself as a lifelong protester.
I've been protesting since I was a kid. When I grow up and I see our government start taking the kids and killing the people in South Sudan, and people fleeing, go to Kenya and go to Eritrea. Everybody is suffer. Sudan suffer a lot. So we really want to stop that.
Sudanese officials have distanced themselves from accusations of unprovoked deadly violence. Washington, D.C. demonstrator Miaz Abdelaziz says the Transitional Military Council is directly to blame for human rights violations committed against unarmed Sudanese civilians.
They were all part of the past regime, and they're the ones that massacred the people in the Sudan on June 3rd. This is a very brutal transitional, the military, it's very brutal from what we had seen, from what we had witnessed. So this might deter a few people from coming out, but I believe that we've gone so much, we've gone so far.
For some protesters like al-Madani, protesting is a way to let the world know what is happening in his home country.
We tell them we are dealing with a regime that actually are capable of killing innocent people without even thinking about it. So that burden will be on the international community. You knew about this. You should have been prepared for this, and you should be ready if anything goes wrong.
At least 10 protests were planned in large cities across the United States this weekend, including New York City, Chicago, Houston, and Nashville. al-Madani says his group wanted to show solidarity with their families back home.
Me personally, I feel like the Sudanese community have cracked the code, that the division among us does not work, that we need to stick together to achieve our goals. It's not what happened in December. It was just about bread. It's about prices going up that people cannot afford basic needs. But today is more than that. We want a future. We want a government that works for all of us.
Protests started in Sudan in mid-December after the economic crisis triggered a jump in basic commodity prices for things like bread and fuel. Those early protests evolved into demands for the government to hand over power to civilians, not in 3 years or 2 years, but now. Ayen Deng Bior, VOA News, Washington.
A breakaway faction of the SPLM-IO is calling on President Salva Kiir to expand investigations into oil sale agreements. An official with the SPLM-IO faction says President Kiir should form another commission of inquiry to investigate corruption within government institutions. Wake Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
SPLM-IO Interim Secretary General David Otim Okot accuses some politicians of politicizing President's recent order to investigate all pre-sales of South Sudan's crude oil and contracts. He says some politicians interpret Kiir's decision last month to fire former Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lolgat-Kwoth as a deliberate move to target the SPLM-IO leadership. But Okot says it was strictly aimed at fighting widespread graft in South Sudan. Okot says while the SPLM-IO breakaway faction welcomes Kiir's move, the investigating committee should avoid politicizing its work and put the economic interests of the country above all.
The investigation committee should widen the scope of investigation to target all these groups, because the minister cannot work alone. And we gave a reminder to Honorable Dr. Elia Lumoro and his team to widen the scope of investigation to target these powerful personalities in the government, the private companies, the banking sectors that could have colluded to orchestrate this saga.
Ask it to identify some of the personalities his faction wants the committee to investigate. Okot would not provide specific names, but says the investigation's result should be made public and those officials who are accused of corruption should be prosecuted.
These people here must be ashamed in the public, and the prosecution must also take its course. Because, you know, in order to bring sanity to this country, it will be brought by the citizens of this country. It will be brought by the leaders of this country. There's nobody who is outside who is going to help us to salvage this country from the carnage it is in.
Okot says former and current government ministers found guilty of corruption should be sentenced to prison, and that, he says, would be the best revitalization of the peace agreement.
We cannot just leave people, you know, people who have caused mayhem, people who have stolen the resources of the country, they go back to the bush and later on they come back as a statesman. This is unacceptable. This behavior here must stop.
Peter Mayen Majongdit, leader of the Opposition Alliance, an umbrella group of opposition parties in South Sudan, says he too welcomes an investigation into the country's oil industry, but questions the independence of the investigating team, which consists of government officials.
This should have been done by an independent experts to lead the investigation, who will be both knowledgeable, technical, and as well as professional way of doing. It's important because basically that would avoid any political affiliations.
The committee formed about a week ago and led by Cabinet Affairs Minister Elia Lomro is tasked with investigating all pre-sales of South Sudan crude oil and contracts in the ministries of petroleum and finance. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a star female secondary school student explains her secrets for success. We'll bring that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
When was the last time you did something that made you feel proud?
I founded my private school called Promise College Secondary School, and I'm proud of it because I want to help my citizen in South Sudan.
That was 2015 December when I took a step, because everybody was against journalism, especially in South Sudan. But when I said it is my own belief and my own interest, my own like and my what I love, so why don't I go for it? I shouldn't be listening to what other people say. It should be coming from me. If I want it, I'll have to go for it.
I think a few weeks ago, when I finally managed to balance my life socially and professionally and just get a good work-life, social-life balance.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A student who emerged fourth in the 2018-2019 South Sudan Secondary School certificate examination says her good performance was because of hard work and determination. Farida Juan says she hopes to study geology so she can work in South Sudan's oil industry. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
19-year-old Farida Juan at Juba Model Secondary School in Jubeki State is scored 92.3% on her examinations, just 4 points less than top student Michael Dude Mabior's 96%. Farida says aside from her determination to do well, it was her teachers who made the difference.
In our schools, the teachers never leave us. If we go to school, they cannot let students come without teaching even a day. And I thank God, it is also by the grace of God, plus hard work and determination, I came up to this.
Juan lives with her mother and 5 siblings in Juba's Munuki suburb. She says she faced several challenges during her studies as she often lacked the money for tuition fees or bus fare needed to get to and from school. And in her final year, she often fell sick due to throat infections until she had an operation that was paid for by well-wishers.
Every day sick, every week sick, every month sick. When I go for exam, I get sick. So last year, that was my challenges at school. Even my mother is the one supporting me alone. But I was for these boys. They give me money every weekend. I use it for my transport, even support myself, buy my needs, pens, if I lack pens. Sets, books, I buy with them. Long-term holidays, I do go and work there cleaning. I help the people. They give me some money. Even they were the one who support me during my surgery.
Joan hopes to attend university and study geology, a field which has sparked her interest after a neighbor began working in one of South Sudan's oil fields. Speaking in Arabic, Joan's mother, Joyce Konga, says she's extremely proud of her daughter's accomplishments.
I congratulate her so much. I'm very happy with her results. God has been with us. That's why my daughter has done so well. Farida knew my suffering, how I got the money to pay her fees. I could go to the roadside to make bread to get money and pay them. Now I'm sick and I cannot talk a lot. But I thank her so much and encourage her to continue with her education.
Konga, who used to clean government offices in Juba, is asking the government to support her daughter, saying she no longer has the stamina to do hard work to raise the money needed to pay her children's school fees. Kay Robert, the head teacher at Juba Model Secondary School, describes Joan as a well-behaved and committed student.
This young girl has been among the students who devoted their life to studies. One, she's a girl who is committed to her studies. And number two, I can say the way she behaved in the school also played a great role, because she was always there. You don't find her absent in school, and very much committed to her studies. So I think emerging among the best students in the country is not a surprise.
Out of slightly more than 22,000 students who sat for the secondary exams across the country, a little more than 17,000 passed, 12,500 are males, while only 4,600 students who took the exams are females. According to Deng Teng Ho, South Sudan's Minister for General Education, even though only one third of the students who sat were girls, their overall performance was good this year. Joan advises South Sudanese girls that no matter what adversities they face in life, they should focus on their studies and work hard to achieve the best results possible in the examinations. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
A new report warns that increasing heat stress due to global warming will result in huge job and economic losses in 2030, with the poor countries being the biggest losers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of the International Labour Organization's recent report entitled Working on a Warmer Planet, the Impact of Heat Stress on Labour Productivity and Decent Work.
The ILO reports rising temperatures and increasing heat stress at work will lead to the loss of 80 million full-time jobs and to global economic losses of 2.4 $1 trillion in 2030. Authors of the study call their estimates conservative, as projections are based on a global temperature rise of 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. Climate scientists predict temperatures could rise by as much as 3 degrees Celsius. The report says people who work outdoors, mainly in the agricultural and construction sectors, will be most affected by rising temperatures. It says agriculture will account for 60% of global working hours lost due to heat stress, followed by the construction sector with an estimated loss of 19%. The chief of the ILO's research department and a main author of the report, Catherine Saget, says Southern Asia and Western Africa are the most seriously affected regions. She says 7 of the hardest hit areas are described as least developed countries in Africa.
Heat stress is concentrated in countries, in regions with existing decent work deficits, a large share of informal employment, extended working poverty, and limited social security coverage. In Africa, for example, 75% of the population has no legal health protection.
Saget says 2.3% of working hours will be lost in Africa in 2030 due to heat stress, which is higher than the global average of 2.2%. The report says workers in wealthy countries also will be affected by excessive heat, but to a much lesser extent than those in poor countries. This, it notes, will widen the inequality gap between low and high income countries and result in worsening working conditions for the most vulnerable. The ILO urges governments to enact policies to address heat stress risks and protect workers. These include the creation of better working conditions and improving early warning systems for heat events. It also calls for enhancing occupational safety and health to help people tackle heat-related hazards. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A South Sudanese journalist has written a new book describing life in the country's capital, Juba, through the eyes of a mosquito. Daniel Akol's book entitled Mosquito in Juba captures the struggle many South Sudanese have experienced over the years and the challenges they face today. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba.
Author and journalist Daniel Akol uses the metaphor of a mosquito exploring the world around him, which in this case is Juba. Throughout its journey, the mosquito comes across problems like poverty, crime, youth gangs, and dire humanitarian needs. In its travels, the mosquito witnesses deadly fighting in Bahr el Ghazal and human rights abuse, including rape. Akol says there are lessons to be learned from his book and believes it could be turned into cartoon characters for children.
It is an imaginary story also. Our martyrs, they race up and then they try to rescue those who was going to lose their life in crisis. And they make a border for a city. That is a city for the peace. Anyone want to join this peace, this city, must be a person for peace.
The French Institute at the University of Juba sponsored the book's launch a few weeks ago at the university, where free copies were distributed to the audience. Akol says publishing is expensive, but he didn't write the book to make a huge profit.
I just take a risk like the mosquito, like what he done in his story. Because if you go, there is no government help to publish a book. All this work had been done from me and some friends. So we just went to the printers and then we print the book, and then as you see, we make a launching. Even to make all this, only the center here, they help us with some like chairs and sound system, all of this. But profit from the book, I don't. Maybe if there are some people who buy it.
Akol says he hopes that when people read and understand South Sudan's history, they will work to change the country in a positive way. Juba-based freelance journalist Emanuela Leong Erasto says she especially appreciates how the writer highlights the problem of the South Sudanese criminal gangs, in which youth call themselves the N-word and defend their leaders until they die.
Young boys that are gathering in Juba, their idol, then they start killing, they organize themselves actually, then it's all there in the book, and it's a reality that we are facing in Juba.
Writers and readers meet at the French Institute twice a month when an author or reader recites passages from a book, which is followed up with a round table discussion about the book. 70% of South Sudanese aged from 15 years and above are illiterate, according to UNESCO. A term Daniel Dow, one of the founders of Come Let Us Read initiative, says he and other colleagues are trying to create an environment where South Sudanese are encouraged to read.
When you read, you get access to information. You are empowered mentally by information. Once you are empowered, you will be able to occupy and master your life properly. So this is our vision. And we are trying also to create a conducive environment where people can have free access to books.
Professor Deng Awur Wenying from the University of Juba's Law School praises the initiative, saying it gives the youth a platform to showcase their work and do more reading.
Youth should be encouraged to attend to school. They should be encouraged to be ambitious, to go up to university level. So we urge our government and our society as a whole to encourage the youth and in fact make playgrounds for them. You encourage them to go to reading places. There should be clubs where they go read, libraries.
Wen Ying says one cannot acquire knowledge unless one reads. Akol has also written several short stories that have been published in the local Arabic-speaking newspapers. He writes contemporary stories, folk tales, and reports on developments in the news. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ras Corby.
The King of Israel seen Most High Joe Rastafari. And you don't know any time righteousness and consciousness come forward. The people always want to kill it down seen. Bless the Most High. Original Rascal, the life and direct South Sudan liberated. Yeah. Watch it.
They call me a public enemy because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy.
Japanese or Chinese, I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemies. Public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemies.
Say, anytime I want to talk about my people's rights,
they call me a warrior.
Anytime I want to talk about equal rights and justice,
they call me a criminal.
Don't forget about the facts and the present before you make your judgment.
Don't forget about the facts and the present before you make your judgment.
Do you remember the days of slavery when our forefathers were taken across the Atlantic? It was a pity. Hey. I heard about reparations.
We've been listening to Russ Corby with the song Public Enemy. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Like a bodyguard, think about your blessings, son, give your mind a straight. Harvest in season, man, this is what you wait. Cloud now, celebrate with the raindrop. Land of that green grass, please don't stop.
This is not hearing down. Brother Moses, who crossed the Red Sea with the children of Israel to promise.